For this segment of Tech Talk with Johnson College, Dr. Katie Leonard hosts Latita Smith, President and CEO of the Moses Taylor Foundation, where they will discuss the coronavirus pandemic's influence on mental health concerns, our community, and the healthcare field.
So as I'm recording this, we're about to go into the time of year that represents Thanks and Giving. It's early November, and it really has me thinking about the holidays. Now, I don't want to sit here and go on and on about how different it's going to be this year. I think we're all very well aware of that. But if there's one positive for this year, it is that I've come to appreciate the small businesses that I frequent that much more. I was lost without them during the height of the pandemic when the stay-at-home order was in place. Sure, I could order from them online, but it's not the same when it comes to small businesses. I really couldn't wait to get back to them when we could, because it's not so much about what I buy at these places, although, of course, I do always find something to purchase, whether it's for myself or someone I care about. But it's more about the experience and the interactions that I have when I'm there. So I know all of us frequent the big box stores and we shop at Amazon. I'm not going to sit here and say that I don't. And yes, that's a certain type of experience too. But where I live in Scranton, the community is really made up of these great eclectic small businesses that make my life and I know the lives of so many others better. So I want to give a shout out to the gals at the Curiosity Shop, the crew at Pop It, the fabulous people at Nada & Company and Zumo's Cafe, on, and of course the awesome people at Little Pizza Heaven, some of the best Italian food I have ever eaten, and that's coming from a New Yorker. These places are surviving the pandemic, and not all have been so lucky. My favorite pizza place, Brunetti's, another great neighborhood joint, had to close, and I will miss their pizza in my hair salon. And recently, I got an email from the Strand bookstore. I'm sure many of you have heard of the Strand. It's an iconic bookstore in New York City, and it basically read that they might not survive the pandemic. With tourism being down and New Yorkers just not being out and about as much, or they're moving out of the city, so there's just not as many of them, they may not make it. So think about that. That's the Strand. For me, that's a million little interactions that have created so many wonderful memories of my time growing up in New York and visiting since I've moved away. I wanted to be there for others. I wanted to be there for my daughter so she can have those kinds of experiences over time. And it almost doesn't seem fair that it's happening. So now, fast forward a week, and the Strand is already doing better. But again, it's the Strand. So let's do the same for our own local small businesses. They connect us. They're there for us. Let's be there for them, especially going into this holiday season. So I have another challenge for all of you. Since we have more time on our hands these days, let's all vow to be more intentional about our shopping this holiday season. For every big store, big box store that we visit, an Amazon purchase we make, let's commit to making two purchases at a local small business. Treat yourself, shop for others. I promise you will find such unique items as you shop, and you will make some unexpected connections as well. It's these types of connections that bond us as a community and make us healthier. Which leads me to our guest this month, Ms. Latita Smith, President and CEO of the Moses Taylor Foundation, joins me. We discuss this very topic, how interconnected we all are and how it fuels our health and our very being. We also talk about the impact that COVID is having on our mental well-being and how important it is for all of us to be there for each other. I hope you enjoy. I hope you learn something. And please, over the next month, think about those small businesses you love and take a stop in. I promise it will make you feel a little bit better. Thank you for listening. Well, thank you so much for being here with me today, Latita. It's so great to see you.
My pleasure.
So just to start off, you know, for those that don't know, could you tell us a little bit about the Moses Taylor Foundation?
Moses Taylor is a private health conversion foundation. We were established from the sale of Moses Taylor Hospital System. The hospital system was a nonprofit for many, many years. And when it was sold in 2012 to a for-profit corporation, the proceeds from the sale endowed the foundation. And so we have about $90 million that we oversee, and it's our responsibility to invest in improving the health of Northeast Pennsylvania.
So when you started here, it must have been, you know, it must have been difficult to figure out, well, within this space of healthcare, which is so broad, especially community health in a community like Northeastern Pennsylvania, how did you and, you know, the board of directors sort of decide on the scope and the range of what to focus on and fund?
So we spent a lot of time early on really taking some time to talk with a variety of stakeholders. We really wanted to talk with other community leaders, with various nonprofit professionals, as well as community members, just to understand what they saw as both the challenges and opportunities that exist in our community. We take a very broad view of health, so health is not just the physical well-being of people in our community, but also their mental health and a range of things that help to impact the health of individuals. And so we really want to understand what people saw as the leading health needs in our community. We also looked at the data, and we're very interested in understanding how we stack up against other regions in the Commonwealth and in the country. And from all of that, we identified some broad areas where we thought we could make impact. So we have an interest in primary health care and behavioral health, in oral health and the healthcare workforce, and also in human services that help to promote good health, like access to food and housing and things like that.
That's great. So now, you know, considering the times that we're in, and living, you know, through COVID, how has that impacted the foundation? How has that impacted your grant making?
So, well, certainly COVID has impacted our world in a myriad of ways. Yeah. I think that, you know, in many ways, though, we found that COVID has really pushed to the forefront a lot of issues that we care deeply about. I think it has underscored for the country, for the world, how interconnected we all are, how very much your health is directly tied to my health. And the importance of us all recognizing how important public health is to the region. We happen to live in a community that doesn't have a public health department. Actually, most of the counties in the Commonwealth don't have a public health department, but in particular, our region doesn't. And so you recognize the impact of that and how that affects access to information, access to interventions, and the role that all of us need to play in promoting the health of the region.
Yeah, I'm so glad you touched upon that, because there's been a lot of conversations about that. I know there was a big article that the Scranton Times did about the lack of a health department. And what's interesting is that I'm from New York originally, and I came to Pennsylvania to go to school down in York County, and they did have a health department, and it was very active in all things, to your point, just public health, touching upon that interconnectedness. They would even work with the, you know, the Human Relations Commission and bring just community events together, understanding that the community's health is also tied to our individual health. And if we're better, you know, as individuals, then the community's going to be better. So can we just stay on that a little bit and just, you know, from your perspective, because you have such an interesting background. Have you seen, you know, like what are the effects, I guess, of a public health department in other areas?
Sure. So I grew up in Cleveland, and in Northeast Ohio, we had a city health department, a county health department, in addition to having the state health department. And so the access to information that we had, granular information regarding the health status of people in our community, was really essential. And it's something that I feel the absence of here in Northeast Pennsylvania, although we do have great resources that do provide us with some timely information around key indicators. But it's not the kind of primary data that you have when you have a health department. But not only just the access to information, but also the leadership. Having a neutral party identify these are the health priorities of our community, and having that authority to bring together a wide variety of stakeholders to say this is important and we need to all contribute to resolving these health priorities in our community is really essential. In addition to moving health policy to ensure that there is policy at a local level that helps to support the health of the region. So I think that it's that information, the policy, the convincing convening and leadership that I miss having in our region. And again, there are a variety of stakeholders who are playing critical roles. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, not every community can have its own health department. They are expensive. Mm-hmm. They never pay for themselves. They always have a significant need for resources. But I think that they do add value. And now is one of those times where we feel the absence of something like that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to your point, there are wonderful resources and people doing such great work. You know, the mayor of, you know, the city of Scranton brought together a lot of those stakeholders through this. I know I was lucky enough to be in a group with other college presidents in the city, doctors from, you know, Commonwealth Health, Geisinger, the medical college. And I thought, you know, how lucky am I? But then at the end of the day, as we were putting our reopening plans together and our safety plans together and just thinking about all of this differently, we were all still looking at each other thinking, well, who do we really report this
sure.
to? You know, we're lucky, knock on wood. We're more than halfway through the semester right now here at the college. We've had no positive cases on campus. But still, I think the big question was, as we were putting our plans together, if there were, who do we report to other than the state? Who do we turn to for guidance? Certainly, you know, the mayor has kept this group together and we're leaning heavily on each other. But I think for us, like you said, it just, I think, was just shining a very bright light on, you know, you realize what you don't have when you absolutely feel as if you need it.
Absolutely. Yes.
So from your perspective, like, what would it take if we were to do, you know, establish a health department here? Like you said, I know it takes a lot of resources and, you know, but it could also be something that I think really brings this community together. Because I think, you know, to your point earlier, we all, I think, have a good understanding of the different health issues of the area. I think there's things that we can agree upon that as a community we're really strong at, but there's also things that we need to work at, you know, collectively and together. And this could be maybe something that brings some of those issues together.
So there is a lot of emerging energy in amongst mm-hmm. the city. So certainly the mayor of Scranton has a strong interest in standing up a public health department, but also in Lackawanna County. And so there are public officials there who are also thinking about what this would take. And there are a variety of similar discussions, as you would imagine, happening throughout the Commonwealth as individual municipalities are thinking about, do we have enough of what it takes to build a public health department in our region. Mm-hmm. And so some of it is just bringing those individuals together to plan, to identify what resources are available, mm-hmm. what it would take from the state. Mm-hmm. And so I am part of a group who's working with the Institute for Public Policy and Economic Development to really do a feasibility study around that now.
That's great. And could this be one of those issues where, like you talked about, you hit the nail on the head, like, looking at taking a step back and really looking at this as a regional issue. I think, again, there's things we do really well as a region, and then there's things where sometimes, you know, we kind of step back and say, well, this is Lackawanna County, this is Luzerne County, this is Wayne County, this is Pike, but I really think this could be an opportunity for us to come together around this and say, you know what, if we've learned nothing through the COVID, it's that we are interconnected, our health does depend on each other, and we are stronger together. So even though it comes out of something that has not been very healthy for everyone, I actually think there could be a lot of positive momentum and good outcomes.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
So it's exciting to hear about the work that's going on.
Yes.
So just to, you know, kind of say, you know, with the pandemic and you know, I know the foundation kind of is on the front end of just looking at trends and where things are going. So are there, even before COVID, were there other things that you were seeing in the community? Any shifts, any, you know, trends that you were like, ooh, this is something that we kind of need more information on?
Sure. So, a couple of years ago, our foundation launched a strategic planning process. And as part of that, we really looked to identify what were the greatest areas of need in our community and where could we really make a difference. And a couple of the issues that we landed on, one was the whole issue of older adult isolation. And it seems really, it seems absolutely right now,
yes,
that we would have chosen that area, but we chose it a couple of years ago because we really identified that Northeast Pennsylvania is really aging. Many of our residents are becoming older, which is something that we should feel really proud of. And yet at the same time, many of them are isolated. And what we found is that isolation has a significant impact on older adults. It impacts not only your mental health, but also your physical health. AARP has determined that being isolated as an older adult is akin to smoking 16 cigarettes a day. It has that kind of impact on your physical body. Wow. And on your immune system, on your susceptibility to cardiovascular disease and a whole range of other health concerns. And so we really looked to bring together a group of stakeholders in Lackawanna County to think about how could we work together to better identify older adults at risk for isolation, to help to connect them to resources and educate the general community about the impact of older adult isolation. So that's one issue that we've really been looking to build awareness of. But in general, our foundation has really looked to underscore the reality that your physical health is only determined by a very small part by your genetics or what you're born with, and by the actual care that you get in the doctor's office. The largest part of your health is determined by your behavior, the individual choices that you make and the choices that you have the ability to make. And for so many people in our community, particularly those of lower income, their ability to make choices is significantly hindered by their income. And so the food they're able to eat, the opportunities they have for recreation, where they're able to live are all determined by their income. And to the degree that we can help people in our community live a higher quality of life, we can also help them to have the opportunity to make better healthcare choices. And so making that connection between those social determinants of health is also something that we've tried to work really hard to do.
Yeah, and it's so interesting. I think it was the University of Scranton that did their living wage study.
Yes.
And just how much comes down to even the zip code.
Absolutely.
And that was something that I know, you know, coming from New York, where you have some of the most, you know, wealthiest of zip codes, and yet some of the, you know, kind of poorest zip codes as well. It was something that I was always very much, you know, aware of just growing up. But I don't know if, you know, because it's not sort of as prevalent here, I think, that sometimes we forget about it. Sometimes we just think, you know, we all get caught up in our daily lives and we think, you know, everyone's like me, everyone has the access, you know, that I do, everyone, you know, makes the same choices. And to your point, that's, you know, so often not the case. And it really does sometimes just come down to, this is where I was born, this is what my family life was like, and this, and it's just sort of that same cycle.
Yes.
So from your background, what are those things that help break some of those cycles? I know that's a big...
Yes. So certainly part of it is education at a ground level, just ensuring that that there's early access to education for children, ensuring that families have access to not only education that enables them to seek more sustainable employment, but also just access to the kind of health information and education that can help them to make healthier choices. That's really critical.
Education alone, because even that, I think sometimes we take for granted that,
yes,
you know, again, the school, you know, if my parents had access to good, you know, quality, you know, daycare, to, you know, even just starting from a young age, even those that, you know, feel as if they want to put their children in daycare versus those that have to put their children in daycare, and
sure,
then the access that they have. And just, again, you know, it's interesting to just think about, like, the ripple effect that some of those early decisions, and like I said, sometimes people, you know, have, they look at it, well, I have the opportunity and access to make these decisions, where, you know, some people it's like, well, no, like I have to make this decision.
Absolutely.
So I, you know, definitely, you know, access and education. And then over the course of someone's life, you know, going back to what you were saying too about the older adult population, I'm so fortunate to be on the board of NeighborWorks of Northeastern Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And we've done some wonderful work, you know, with seniors.
Yes.
And again, through the pandemic, this was something, you know, we were working on as well prior to the pandemic, but I think it really just drove home how important the work is that we're doing through the pandemic, because, you know, we started a very active just outreach program and, you know, making phone calls to seniors.
Yes.
And, you know, some of the stories that the staff and volunteers were coming back with, you know, the senior person saying, you were the only, you know, person to check in on me through this. You know, you're the only voice that I heard today. I mean, some of it is just,
yes,
really, it just puts everything into perspective. And just going back to what you said earlier about how we're all interconnected, and, you know, again, if we don't take care of each other,
yes,
you know, we're not, these generations, you know, that we learn so much from aren't going to be around. So, you know, thank you for doing that work, because I just think, you know, being a part of it from the NeighborWorks perspective, it's just very, very important that we take care of
absolutely
our seniors. So could you tell me or share with everyone a little bit about your background, particularly, you know, the work that you did, I believe, for the city of Cleveland.
Sure.
You know, during the AIDS and HIV pandemic. And could you share, like, are there any parallels between, you know, that pandemic and what we're seeing today?
Sure. So I began my career in Northeast Ohio, working for nonprofits and then for city government in Cleveland. And I did work for the Cleveland Health Department, where I oversaw their HIV/AIDS program. And it was a body of federal and state funding that I managed that was responsible for supporting HIV prevention education, as well as care services for people living with AIDS. At the time that I was there, it was in the late 90s, and so it wasn't at the peak of AIDS. It was actually when awareness and sensitivity to the AIDS epidemic was actually waning, and so a lot of our work was really around helping people recognize that it was still a significant risk, and we really needed to continue to stay cognizant of those things that put particular communities at risk. I think one of the things that I learned through working for the Cleveland Health Department that resonates with me right now is the way that pandemics like COVID and an epidemic like AIDS can really exacerbate the disparities that already exist in a community.
Mm-hmm.
So when we looked at the people who were most impacted by HIV in Northeast Ohio, but really across the country, across the world, it ended up being those people who were already most at the margin. So those people who were already burdened by substance abuse disorders, people who were already living in poverty, people who already lacked access to healthcare and education. Those were the folks who were often had less resources to keep themselves healthy. So even when they contracted the disease, they fared far less well than other people with access to resources and supports, because basic things like stable housing, employment that ensured health care, and access to healthy food that significantly impacted your outcomes ended up making a big difference in how people fared when they were living with AIDS. And to the same degree, we see that happening with COVID, that access to healthcare, access to a healthy place to live, to recuperate. We're finding that for so many communities, when people do not have stable housing, they don't have a place where, even if they are faring with COVID, they don't have a safe place to take care of themselves, mm-hmm. Away from their family members. And so again, all of those issues that already kept people at the margin just exacerbate their experience with COVID. And so it reminds us that these health disparities that always exist in our community are something that we need to continue to be mindful of addressing. And there are disparities that exist for older adults, that exist mm-hmm. for low-income families, that exist for racial minorities, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. And again, so much of it just comes down to, you know, how does a person almost start their life? You know, are they, you know, when you take a step back, are they even on a level playing field when
right.
you look at the averages? And something too that as we're talking, it's kind of interwoven throughout, but you know, I still think in this day and age, it doesn't get enough attention. And that's like the impact that all of this has on our mental health. And again, even our capacity to make decisions, like how does that impact, you know, if we all know you're having a bad day, and it does, you can't help it. It just impacts the way in which you make decisions, your outlook on life, just kind of keeps you sometimes either from going down the rabbit hole or not going down the rabbit hole. So, you know, whether you look at, you know, your time, you know, working in Cleveland or now with COVID, how do you see things like this, you know, kind of like the mental health concerns that it causes and the ripple effects?
Absolutely. So, I mean, we already knew that there were significant mental health challenges in our community. Just per capita, there are fewer mental health professionals in our region than there are in other areas of the Commonwealth. And so we recognize that there are a lot of people without access to the care and support that they need. But in crisis times like these, you feel it more acutely. And so, we think a lot about what happens when kids aren't in school. And so for so many kids who were accessing mental health treatment and support in the school systems, mm-hmm. now that schools are not there every day and they're not allowing ancillary folks into the school buildings, many of those kids are without those kinds of supports that they really need. There's mm-hmm. also just the stigma around mental health at the beginning, and the idea that most people don't recognize it as a true health concern. They mm-hmm. they see it more as a personal deficit, and so that impacts people's ability to seek help when they need it, to recognize they're in trouble when they are. And mm-hmm. so we've done a lot of work to try and normalize mental health across our community, and even celebrate Mental Health Awareness Month as something that we all need to be tuned mm-hmm. into, especially times like now where yeah. we're all feeling more stress and have so much more challenges that we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm. You know what's interesting? I thought through all of this that it would become easier for people to talk about. And what I'm finding, even here on campus, is that it's becoming even more challenging, because to your mm-hmm. point, I don't know that people want to admit that they're struggling, or that, you know, even that it's impacting them, because in a lot of ways it's not. Like, if they don't have somebody who's been affected, or, you know, they don't, you know, they've never lived through this before,
sure.
So just think, well, like, this is life, we have to press on, we have to you know, keep going, especially with our population of student. We have, you know, a lot of, but, you know, male, you know, dominated. Mm-hmm. I know mental health issues tend to impact males a little, like, later, in their, like, earlier, you know, to mid-20s. So, you know, I just feel the more we can talk about it and people just understand that, okay, like, this is just a normal part of my total health and my experience, I think, you know, I really think that's important.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, I've been saying, you know, the staff here has heard me, you know, say it, winter hasn't even hit yet. So right now we've been fortunate that it's been,
yes.
it was a wonderful summer. It's been a beautiful fall. That's where we're at right now. But the winter hasn't hit
yet. Yes.
And, you know, I feel at this point, you know, we're towards the end of October now. For us, we're more than halfway through our semester. And, you know, the last couple of weeks, you know, little things are just starting, I think, to get to people, you know, working from home, their children, you know, being at home, different schedules, even just stuff like that.
Absolutely.
And those of us that, you know, think that we have it all together even are starting to be like, oh, like this is, it's hard.
Sure.
Like this is hard. So could you just share a little bit from your perspective, like resources that might be available?
Sure. I know. Well, one thing that we've done, I mean, I think leadership matters a lot in organizations, and to the degree that, you know, you as a leader or me as a leader of our organization can just say out loud that it is a difficult time, that it's normal to not be okay. I think that that really goes a long way. We've even at the foundation instituted health days. So instead of having sick time, we have health time. And so, and it's equally okay for someone to take a day off for a health day, a mental health day, as it is if you have like the cold or the flu. And believe me, like I have two school age kids at home and I've taken some health days because, you know, it is tough managing the foundation, managing their schedules, and it's hard to juggle it all. And so I think that by taking the time to do that myself and modeling for my team that it's okay to say I need to take a pause and, you know, breathe or walk outside before it starts snowing is really important. And I think that it goes a long way to say that that we value mental health as much as we value physical health. And you don't have to be sick to need an opportunity to take care of your health.
Yeah. And it's so funny. Like, again, it's one of those things where when it's a physical thing, it's like, okay, well, I'm not feeling good. And I know I'm going to take this time off and I'm going to feel better. It's just, it's so different when it comes to, like you said, just taking that break and that mental health time.
Or even with a physical thing, you think, I don't want to make other people sick. So, I may want to go to work, but I don't want to, give everyone else, you know, the flu. But, you know, you're not going to give everyone else anxiety. But still, it's important that you take care of yourself.
Yeah, and it's real. Kind of shifting gears a little bit. I know, you know, we touched upon it a little bit earlier, but just, you know, the healthcare workforce of the region. I know we've had a wonderful partnership, the foundation and Johnson College, and, you know, building that pipeline. So could you talk a little bit just about the foundation's work in this area? And again, like what you're seeing as a trend.
Yes. So healthcare workforce is one of our core areas of investment. And we've been really pleased to have multiple partnerships with Johnson College around your myriad of programs for healthcare professionals. And healthcare is one of the leading industries in our community. And we really see an opportunity to not just help produce more doctors and nurses in our region, although we do need those, but also help people in our community understand the myriad of jobs that they can have within the healthcare industry. So how you can bring an interest in communications or technology or a whole host of different subject matters into healthcare and the healthcare workspace. And so we have done a lot of work with area colleges and universities to help educate students. We've done work with industry partners so that they can increase opportunities for internships and other opportunities that will bring community members into their places of business to understand what happens there. And we really recognize it as vital, not only to you know, creating a stronger workforce in our community, but also ensuring that people from here have the opportunity to take care of people here because they understand the community best, they understand their neighbors best, and they would be most inclined to stay here after graduation. And so that is very important to us.
That's a great point. You know, we often say that we sort of, you know, contribute to the brain gain, not the brain drain, because the majority of our students are from, like, probably within a 60-mile radius, I would say. And we were just having this conversation, too, internally about, we do a lot of live labs out in the community. So we have a very strong internship program, clinical program, but also now getting students out even earlier into different industry locations to do a lot of their lab work and their tasks and their experiential learning. But another piece of that is just, to your point, just giving back to the community and just helping students understand that, you know, by doing this, you know, volunteer, you know, housing project as opposed to being, you know, strictly part of your class, you are impacting your neighbors. And our students love that experience.
Sure.
And I feel there's no better way for them to combine their awesome technical skills that they, you know, come here to hone and build, but those soft skills mm-hmm. as well. Just, you know, it kind of brings, you know, the whole conversation that we've been talking about here together in terms of that interconnectedness. Because yes. when they drive down Main Ave and they see a house that they helped wire, or, you know, a senior that they helped maybe put a ramp mm-hmm. on their house so they could stay in that house and age the way in which that they choose to.
Yes.
It has a huge impact on students. And I hope, you know, students that aren't from this area, it helps them to recognize, like, hey, this is just all, at the end of the day, it's all about just people mm-hmm. helping people. And we're all human.
Yes.
And, but, you know, how, from your perspective, what are some of the ways in which, you know, community organizations are helping to build that healthcare pipeline? Are there things, like, any innovative things going on at any of the hospitals? I know they're, you know, I think they're even looking at clinical sites differently, just making sure students have the opportunity to come in.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, with the birth of our of the Geisinger Commonwealth Medical College, there have been a lot of opportunities that that has brought to help better bridge the community and the healthcare industry. And so they have programs where they are going into high schools and helping to educate students about health careers, create opportunities for internships and partnerships around research and a variety of programs that are really giving young people access to the field of medicine in new and innovative ways.
Yeah, and to your point too, just the variety of careers. I think, you know, sometimes yes. people think healthcare, or no different than just careers in general. Everyone knows, you know, doctor, lawyer,
yes.
you know, teacher, but just healthcare alone, the different paths somebody can take. So we're even trying to do more and more of that too, like after school programming, STEM programming, just helping people at a much younger age understand that, like, yep, there's still doctor, lawyer, you know, too, but
sure.
there's all these other pathways you can take as well, depending on what you're interested
definitely
in.
And also understand the career ladders that exist, so that
yes.
you could start off, you know, today as a STNA, and that is training that you can receive